welcome to another edition of Money Matters. My name is Mark Cudaverde. Thanks for joining me today. Your Economic Forum. This is show 345, and it is entitled Truckers and the Government Debt Milestone. So before we begin, please be advised that discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. As always, indices mentioned are unmanaged and cannot be invested into directly. And of course, past performance is no guarantee of future results. Investing involves risk, of course. This show is Money Matters, and Money Matters is about money, as money does matter, and the matters of money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little bit, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, in some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. It's about your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it, your lives and livelihood depend on it. In short, Money Matters is about you. So the last show I entitled, Is It Over? Well, yesterday was pretty good. Yesterday was the 15th. I think you're hearing the show on the 17th. So anyway, the 15th was a pretty good day. And it was rumored to have happened because Vladimir Putin, the Republic of Russia, Russia as we know it, pulled back some of his troops. You know, I thought it was interesting. A lot of people said, Mark, I was way off base on this. But you know, they had a Russian skater at the Olympics. She tested positive for drugs for a variety of substances. And the International Olympic Committee let her skate. So I thought, I wonder if Vladimir Putin's hundreds of thousands of men, armament, bullets, machinery, and tanks on the border of the Ukraine had anything to do with it. I don't know. Somebody said, oh, Mark, you're way off base. And other people said, I never thought of that. But in any case, as soon as they announced that she would be allowed to skate, to the chagrin of some of the other skaters there, he rumored to have pulled back. Now, has he pulled back? I mean, that's really the thing, right? We don't know. Out from Bloomberg today, they kind of summarized the markets today. And I thought it was a rather good summation of what was going on. And they basically said there was kind of no proof that he had actually pulled back. So we don't know. But it is interesting, you know, that they're not going to mess with Vladimir Putin and outlaw his skater. And you got to admit that the skater was the number one skater in the Olympics. So there you go. So I don't know. I don't know if they really had anything to do with it, but we will see. Anyway, on the markets, you know, the NASDAQ and a lot of the NASDAQ stocks have been destroyed. I mean, Zoom and DocuSign and Zscaler and Okta and some of the other ones are off 60, 70, 80%. I mean, at some point, you have to think about whether these are a good deal, right? So I can just tell you that without a recommendation to do this, in my portfolios, I have started adding NASDAQ. Now, again, that's not a recommendation to buy or sell. And I could be way off base here, but much like the March sell-off of COVID in 2020, you know, when it got down so far, at some point I had to start nibbling. So I've been doing that. Could go lower, but I am getting stocks much lower than they were. You know, you're getting Zoom at 80% off than where it was. It's funny, Hilton Hotels has done better than Zoom since COVID. It's kind of an odd thing. But a lot of the NASDAQ and the NASDAQ itself have been hammered. There's a lot of the NASDAQ stocks, as I said, have been hammered 50, 60, 70, 80%. NASDAQ itself, I think, was off 15. But January was a rough month, and February didn't help. But stocks jumped on the 15th as war with Russia was rumored to be canceled or postponed. It's impossible to say. Either way, the market continues to chop around in its range, despite the market being hammered on with endless political and economic worries. The fact that the NASDAQ was up on the 15th of February doesn't mean another ugly headline or news thing won't send it spiraling lower. In fact, I think we can count on that. There'll be something that'll hammer this market again. But the market has been chopping. At least, you know, we saw day after day this thing went up 300, down 600, up 300, down 600. It was just relentless. So we're waiting for what Greg Guthner of the chat calls some follow through. Our favorite metal, for no reason whatsoever, is gold. It's trying to recover, but it just seemed can't get out of its own way. Bitcoin, floating around 40,000, 44,000. You know, I've heard so many people making money on Bitcoin. And in my high school, my college son said, "Dad, I used to tell me all the people, you know, that made tons of money on Bitcoin." And just last week, I saw him in Las Vegas. And he said, "Dad, I know so many people that have lost money in Bitcoin." Let me give you my take on Bitcoin. You know, I look at the chart of this thing from 6 cents to $60,000. And historically, this is the biggest mania we've ever seen. This chart is straight up. Now, I know everybody says it's different this time. I just don't buy it. I've seen these manias, .com and housing, where you can't lose. And I've seen these things go up and go down. And I just can't get into it, you know? I can't say you don't want to buy it or you want to buy it. I'm not going to stop you. I own like a couple of $1,000 worth, like 10 grand worth, but that's it. But I don't trust it. I mean, one, I don't think the governments of the world are going to let another currency usurp their currency. The reason governments want no currency other than their own is because they can print their own currency and spend it. So if the government needs something, social programs or infrastructure, whatever it needs to get voted in, then they can print their own money. Now, if the world goes to like a cyber coin, they won't be able to print it because they can't control it. Now, a lot of people will tell me, well, the Bitcoin is on your computer and governments can't mess with it. Well, they might not be able to mess with the coin itself, of which that I don't even trust because I know it's in cyberspace, but it's like, you know, if your power goes out, you have no access to it. And if the power goes out all over the world, which probably won't happen, but if it did, you don't have any access to it. I may have cash at home or some people may keep gold in a safe deposit box or whatever. But, you know, without power, we're kind of screwed there. But I just, you know, I don't know. There's like millions of Bitcoins out there now, cyber coins, thousands. And that usually happens when things get saturated. Many of them will go under. Bitcoin is the king, of course. But, you know, and there's people hacking into your accounts and getting it. And I've tried to use the Bitcoin exchanges. I've tried Coinbase and FTX, and they are not easy to use. I don't care. Maybe some of you are using them successfully, but I know a guy that is really, really into Bitcoin, and he even said, "Oh, the exchanges are really difficult. Trading in Bitcoin is like the wild, wild west." I'm like, "What? And how much money do you have in it?" Some people have $800,000, $600,000, $500,000 of this stuff. So I just can't get into it. I just can't. Had a friend of mine. He had $100,000 with me, and he pulled it out and bought Bitcoin. He claims he has 29 Bitcoins now, which is around $1.3 million. I don't know if I believe that, but in any case. So anyway, Bitcoin is chopping around. Gold is trying to get out of its own way. You know, gold has been around for eons. Bitcoin, what, 20 years? Most of us fresh to it, 10 years. So I don't get it. I don't get it. Okay, so you may have heard that In Canada, the Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said that as a trucker, if you haven't been vaccinated, you got to go quarantined, okay, 14 days. So obviously, truckers that are trying to cross the border and deliver goods can't sit in a hotel for 14 days. So they're protesting up there. And there are thousands of trucks, they're blocking highways, they're blocking downtown. They're basically saying, "Look, this is our livelihood. And we can't cross your border and sit for 14 days. I'm sorry, it's not going to work." So Trudeau is now thinking of enacting Emergencies Act to put down the truckers' protests. So I've got a little blurb here from Jim Rickards that I'm going to read to you. Now, this is controversial, so I'm just going to read it to you, and then I'm going to give some disclaimers, okay? This is one man's opinion. And he says, "Trudeau can't enact the Emergencies Powers Act until Parliament approves the measure. But Canada is already plowing full speed ahead with its war on financial privacy. It's the latest offensive in the elite's war on cash. The gloves are coming off. The Canadian government is threatening to freeze the bank accounts of truckers participating in their protests, protesting the 14-day sequestration, I guess you call it, if they don't have vaccinations. and anyone helping them, I guess. I don't know. So Jim Rickards goes out to say, this is about following the money. This is about stopping the financing of these illegal blockades. We are today serving notice. If your truck is being used in these protests, your corporate accounts will be frozen. So he's going to freeze the assets if you're a trucker and you have a corporate truck, and they're going to freeze your assets. Canada is also denying crowdsourced funding to the truckers. If you sent money to the truckers through GoFundMe or GoSendGo, the Canadian government intervened to freeze the money. The government is essentially labeling the truckers terrorists and anyone who funds them as sponsors of terrorism. If you think sending cryptocurrencies will get in their way, think again. Here's what she said yesterday in the defense of the Emergencies Act, which is going to freeze funds, and if you try to help them, they'll freeze your funds. We are broadening the scope of Canada's anti-money laundering and terrorist financing rules so that they cover crowdfunding platforms and the payment services that they use. These changes cover all forms of transactions, including digital assets and cryptocurrencies. Now, I told you earlier, my comments now, that the government can't stop the cryptocurrency per se. But what they can do is just shut down the exchanges. You know, you can't trade it. Maybe you can go to the dark web to trade it, but they're like, no, you can't. It may exist and we can't kill it, but you can't trade it in the United States. And if they do that, zingo, your money is probably gone. Onward with Jim Rickards' letter. The illegal blockades have highlighted the fact that crowdfunding platforms and some of the payment services provided they use are not fully captured under the current Proceeds of Crime and Terrorist Financing Act. We are making these changes, so says Chrystia Freeland of the Canadian government. We are making these changes because we know that these platforms are being used to support illegal blockades and illegal activity, which is damaging the Canadian economy. The government is issuing an order with immediate effect under the Emergencies Act authorizing Canadian financial institutions to temporarily cease providing financial services where the institution is suspected that an account is being used to further the illegal blockades and occupations. The order covers both personal and corporate accounts. Third, we are directing Canadian financial institutions to review their relationships with anyone involved in the illegal blockades and report. So here's the rub that Jim goes on. Got money in a Canadian bank account? You better get it out fast before Freeland freezes it, the woman or the government. Canada has gone full fascist and they're coming for your money first. Today they're going after the truckers and those who support them, but why should it stop there, says Mr. Rickards. Once governments exercise previously unexplored powers, they rarely surrender them. Maybe tomorrow they'll go after the accounts of climate change deniers or those who support political parties the establishment doesn't approve of. And if you don't think it's limited to Canada, here in the U.S., so says Jim Rickards, if you support Donald Trump or question the legitimacy of the 2020 election or question vaccine mandates, maybe the government will try to freeze your accounts here. You'll be guilty of spreading hate and disinformation. Boy, that sounds familiar on social media, doesn't it? A fact checker has checked your statement and it's untrue. Anyway, you'll be guilty of spreading hate and disinformation that undermines the public trust in government institutions. It sounds a little bit like Nazi Germany, doesn't it? You may be even guilty of terrorism. Give me a yellow star. Again, that may strike you as hyperbolic, says Jim Rickards. Remember, this is Jim Rickards' letter, not me. And after what we've seen during the past 2 years, why should anything surprise you? The Department of Homeland Security here recently issued a new National Terrorism Advisory System, the NATAS, N-T-A-S, suggesting that if Americans question vaccine mandates, they're now potential domestic violent extremists. Wow. These aren't just theoretical fears, folks, so says Jim Rickards. They're happening in real time. And Canada's newest offensive in the war against cash and financial privacy will only encourage governments further. Boy, that's a mouthful. So he goes on. Now, I just tell you that this is from the Daily Reckoning, okay? This is his opinion. And we're here to provide both opinions. And I'm doing this because a trucker shutdown will affect the economy enormously. So this is economic, you know, this is political, but this is very economic. So he goes on in his second musing, his second diatribe, calling the war on cash entering bold new phase on February 16th. He goes on to say, with much news about Ukraine, inflation, massive government spending, and exploding deficits, it's easy to overlook the war on cash. That's a mistake. He goes on to say, because it has serious implications for your money, your privacy, and your freedom. The war on cash is a global effort being waged on many fronts. My view is that the war on cash is dangerous in terms of lost privacy and the risk of government confiscation of wealth. Governments always use money laundering, drug dealing, and terrorism as excuses to keep tabs on honest citizens and deprive them of the ability to use money alternatives such as physical cash, gold, and these days, crypto. Be warned, you're not out of the woods with cryptocurrency. The real burden of the war on cash, so says Mr. Rickards, falls on honest citizens who are made vulnerable to wealth confiscation through negative interest rates. We won't get into that. Loss of privacy, account freezes, and limits on cash withdrawals or transfers. Now, there are limits on cash withdrawals and transfers already in many, many countries. Brazil is one of them. When they lock down their currency, you could only withdraw 10% a month. The enemies of cash promote the ease and convenience of digital payments. Those of you that are iPhone supporters and love your Apple Pay, it's funny that you've accepted this, in my opinion. Not a dish against Apple or Apple phones whatsoever. I have one. Of course, there's no denying that digital payments are certainly convenient. Yes, they are. I bought an app today with two clicks on my phone. The surest way to lull someone into complacency is to offer convenience that quickly becomes habit and then impossible to do without. The convenience factor is becoming more prevalent and consumers are moving from cash to digital payments just as you move from gold and silver coins to paper money. Okay? Our survey received his survey. It doesn't list what it is, okay, but his survey or their survey from the Daily Reckoning revealed that more than a third of Americans and Europeans would have no problem giving up all cash and completely going digital. Ooh, boy, that's a dangerous precedent there. 30% of Europeans and 38% of Americans would prefer going cashless. Giving up your freedom? Wow. But in reality, the so-called cashless society is just a Trojan horse for a system in which all financial wealth is electronic and represented digitally in the records of a small number of megabanks and asset managers. Once that is achieved, my comment here, it will be easy to turn off for anyone they don't like. He says it will be easy for state power to seize and freeze the wealth or subject to surveillance, taxation, and other forms of digital confiscation like negative interest rates. They can't do that as long as you can go to your bank and withdraw cash. That's the key. In other words, it's much easier for them to control your money if they first herd you into a digital cattle pen. That's their objective. And all the other reasons are just a smokescreen. He says more, but we'll stop there and go on to the frightening milestone that the U.S. government has reached in just a minute. Those are the opinions of Jim Rickards and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of myself. This radio station and staff members are underwriters. We'll be right back with this edition of Money Matters.
We're in the money. We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny.
Money Matters. My name is Mark Cutiberti. You're listening to show 345 on your community radio station entitled Truckers and the Government Debt Milestone. We covered the truckers in Canada, the protests, and the cash, a war on cash. We covered all that. But we're going to go on to the frightening milestone that the U.S. government has reached recently. And again, from our friend Jim Rickards at the Daily Reckoning. Well, we did it. It took some hard work, he said, but the United States government finally managed to find itself with $30 trillion of government debt. $30 trillion. Unfunded liabilities of over $160 trillion. What's the difference? $30 trillion of government debt is what's due now. Unfunded liabilities is what we owe, but not due yet. Okay. If anyone is thinking of celebrating this dubious accomplishment, I have some advice, so says Jim Rickards. Get ready for the hangover. The U.S. government bond market was invented by Alexander Hamilton early in the first administration of George Washington around 1790. The newly formed United States of America was facing claims from creditors who had financed a Revolutionary War. So my comments here, they had to borrow money, so they created the bond market to borrow it. Bonds are just IOUs. Congress had a simple solution, says Mr. Rickards. Default. That's the American way. But Hamilton had a better idea. So they owed a lot of money. And Congress said, let's just not pay. But Hamilton said, no, we should borrow more money and use that money to pay off the old creditors. My comments here, that is known as a Ponzi scheme. Once we did that, we were deemed creditworthy and we could borrow even more money to pay off the money borrowed in the first round. The plan was so successful that the U.S. Treasury market is now celebrating its 230th anniversary. That's how long the U.S. has been borrowing new money to pay off old debt. 1835, Andrew Jackson became the first and only president to cut the national debt to zero. I mean, really cut it, not just fake cut it through bookkeeping. The story of the U.S. debt is not which one which the debt went up steadily for 230 years. The actual history is that the debt went up in times of war, and it went back down. They paid it off. Not so in the last 50, 60 years. Debt went up in 1812, the war, Mexican-American War, Civil War, World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and under Reagan to win the Cold War. But the war debt was paid off during times of peace, including 1820, 1870s, 1920s, 1990s, and after 2000, that's when things went off the rails, and the debt went up straight up under government Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, and Joe Biden. Now the debt is unmanageable and without inflation. Without inflation. No, Jim, there is. Inflation favors debtors because they get to pay back the debt with depreciating dollars. It's easier to pay down debt when you're paying back debt with dollars that are less valuable. Hence, my comments here, the government wants inflation. On the other hand, you don't want deflation because it's harder to pay off. Money's harder to come by on deflation, and then it's harder to pay off debt. So inflation favors people who owe. Deflation does not. The other way for the deal with the debt is to default. Don't pay it. But there's no reason the U.S. to default because the debt is in dollars and they can print dollars. So why would they do that? That's the great advantage of having the world's leading reserve currency, the U.S. dollar, what French finance minister Valéry Giscard d'Estaing termed the exorbitant privilege that the United States had in the 1960s. People who say we can't pay off the national debt don't understand this market. There's no need to pay it off, says Jim. We just have to keep rolling it over. But we need to maintain our credit, as Hamilton understood. Once our credit is called into question, the entire house of cards collapses. Will the United States ever pay the debt? Credit collapses first show up in higher interest rates, then in a devaluation of the dollar, and finally in the illiquid bond markets where the debt just can't be sold except to the Federal Reserve. The final stage is hyperinflation and complete collapse of the currency and the bonds. Jim goes on to say it's not going to happen tomorrow, and I agree, but we're getting closer to that day. He has said before that the U.S. is caught in a debt death trap. Monetary policy won't get us out. Printing more money will not change that. Fiscal policy won't work either because of high debt ratios. At current debt to GDP ratios, each additional dollar spent yields less than a dollar of growth. So the more money they borrow, the more money goes down the hole in the bucket in the rat hole. And because it must be borrowed, it adds a dollar to debt, but it does not add a dollar in benefit to the economy. So debt becomes a drag on the economy. The national debt is $30 trillion. A $30 trillion debt would not be a serious issue if we had a $50 trillion economy. But we don't. We have a $21 trillion economy, which means our debt is bigger than our economy. And it's stalling out. Not counting unfunded liabilities. Don't forget about that. He says we're a third of the way through the first quarter of 2022. The Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta has published its estimate for first quarter growth using the data we have so far, and the result is 0.1% GDP growth on an annualized basis. Yeah. He says that's a rounding error away from recession. I agree. It's significant because the Atlanta Fed is known for highly optimistic forecasts. So basically, Jim is saying that we are getting close to zero stall growth, and that, if it continues for a few quarters, is technically a recession. So, in basic terms, in the bigger picture, the United States is going broke. We're heading for a sovereign debt crisis, a U.S. dollar problem. I don't say that for effect. He says, I'm not looking to scare people. That's an honest assessment based on the numbers only. Tax cuts won't bring us out of it. Taxing the rich won't bring us out of it. Structural changes to the economy won't bring us out of it. Both would help if done properly, but the problem is far too simply too large. You cannot grow yourself or work yourself out of this kind of debt. So he concludes, an economic time bomb is ticking, velocity is dropping, money velocity, debt is growing, while growth is slowing. The explosion will come in the form of asset bubbles bursting and stocks crashing. Careful there. Okay, that's the opinion of Jim Rickards. This does not necessarily reflect the opinion of this station of staff, management, underwriters, and is not meant as investment advice. So we're going to close the show. This is Money Matters. It's been show 345, Truckers and the Government Debt. And there we go. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Remember, comments in the show are my opinion only and not necessarily regarded as investment advice and not a recommendation to buy, sell, or do anything. Okay. Our website is moneymanagementradio.com, where everything is free, our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. My name is Mark Cunaberti. You guys, have a great day.